You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we'll cover a different topic that will help enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
Blue Collar CEOs, it's Ryan. It is great to be with you today. Coming at you with another amazing conversation with Chad Peterman. Chad, if you don't know, has been on our show before. We'll make sure that episode is linked in the show notes. Fantastically smart guy who leads Peterman Brothers based in Indianapolis. They have had insane growth since he took over with his brother in building the business. Today, we're going to be talking about a lot of things that they've learned as far as growing people, empowering them, some of his leadership philosophies. Something he said I want you to pay attention to is what he considers now to be his single biggest growth lever that he ever pulled. He makes a comment of this, and we kind of breeze through it, but I think there's a really, really important lesson there. But you're going to want to take notes. You're going to want to reach out. The other thing that we're going to make a mention on is that he invites companies every month to come and visit the shop. There are not many businesses of this scale that will be as open-handed as they are, located in the central part of the United States. So you don't have to go all the way to the coast. Wherever you are in the middle of the United States, you can probably get to this company easily on a monthly schedule. We'll have all that information in the show notes as well. I'm going to shut up because no one wants to hear me talk. You want to hear Chad. Let's go. All right, Chad, it's good to have you back again. I know we had a really good conversation on a previous episode, which we'll link in the show notes, but maybe for those who didn't catch that episode or don't know who you are yet, let's just start there. Who are you? What do you do?
Absolutely. So my name is Chad Peterman. I'm the president and CEO of Peterman Brothers here in Indianapolis, Indiana. We also have five other locations across central Indiana. Where we do residential heating, plumbing, and electrical service work.
And you've done an incredible job like scaling the business. I want to say, if memory serves, like when you first stepped in with your brother, you're about $1 million in residential revenue. I think last year, most recently, you're right around $90 million in revenue. So you're clearly doing some things incredibly, incredibly well. And the last time we talked, like one of the things you talked about was like how important it was for leadership and how you focus on leadership, developing the space, some of the lessons you've learned along the way. It was a really fascinating conversation. So if you're listening right now and haven't heard that episode, you absolutely should check it out. So it's really glad to have you back on again, man.
Yeah, no, happy to be here. And yeah, leadership is something, especially as we've scaled, where we've really focused on not only building technicians through our school, but also providing the training and resources to our team members who want to take that leadership journey. And as I always say, kind of trade in their HVAC tool belt for their leadership tool belt, which is a completely different skill set. It took us a while to figure that out. But once we did, it was all about surrounding our people with the right resources and training so that they could become great leaders and developers of talent.
So yeah, let's talk about that, because developers of talent, like growing people, empowering them to be their best, like those are all things that any smart organization obsesses over, because that's the lifeblood of the business being able to continue to thrive. How do you think about those challenges and those opportunities, like, because at some point, like, do you feel like, hey, we're no longer a service company, now we're like a people development company, or how does that work for you when you think about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you're spot on when you say that, you know, we look at ourselves as more of a training organization than we are. We just happen to put in furnaces and water heaters. And so I think when you view it like that, you kind of situate yourself in a place where, you know, as you're building the company, as you're making investments and doing different stuff like that, when it's all centered around the training aspect and developing people and providing a place where, you know, they can go chase their dreams and their potential, you can create a really special place And what I found is that kind of the revenue and the, you know, while yeah, it gets bigger, it kind of takes care of itself when you've got a group of people who understand that they're supported, understand that they have the resources to be successful, and have a path to go chase whatever it is that they want to become.
Was there a part, because that sounds, okay, this is going to sound weird. As someone who's like sitting on like a significant revenue business, it sounds like really easy and really matter of fact to be like, oh, we focus on people and people are everything. But clearly you weren't always that way, right? You weren't always this massive business that you are now. Was there a point for you in the transition, in the scale up from 1 mil to 90 mil, where you feel like either there was a transitional point in your thinking or your ability to implement these sort of like people development processes? Like, I guess, how do you go from like 1 to 90? I can't imagine being linear. I can't imagine being smooth. And I can't just imagine you can just drop the needle for what you do now as a $1 million, $5 million, $10 million shop. Help me walk through some of those like transition points, if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think once you get to that $10 million mark is an interesting one, because at that point in time is really when, you know, you're starting to put in kind of that middle management. And we did, like everybody else, we made some mistakes along the way and put the wrong person on the wrong seat on the bus, and learned. But I think that's the level where we didn't figure it out. We were able to push through it. But where you start to notice, you know, sometimes you get lucky and you find some really good people, who kind of cover up that learning for you. And so I always look back on some of the, you know, kind of some of the, you know, when the people were in the wrong seat, all that we learned from that, and who, you know, what kind of characteristics and competencies do we need out of, you know, a leader and a people developer. And so that was kind of a transition point. And then once you get up into, you know, 20 and 30, I think that's when you can really look to bring in people from outside the industry. You know, often people talk about, oh, yeah, you ought to bring in people from outside the industry. Well, I think that's important. Absolutely. You know, our entire executive team, no one has ever worked on a furnace. There was a time when a lot of those people did work on furnaces. And that's not to say their opinion was, you know, less than or anything like that. It's just looking at it from a different angle, you know, sometimes provides that ability to scale. And I would say finding those people from outside, that have had experiences, you know, maybe in similar industries, but sometimes not, and then putting them in place, that's when you really start to see that, that velocity, to where the growth starts to really go. But then you've got to where we're running into and have for this past year is you get all that set in place, but then, you know, sometimes then you forget about the training that the middle managers need, because they go from managing, you know, 10 technicians to now all of a sudden, you know, you scaled it and now they're managing 30 and 40 and 50 technicians. And they don't have the training that they need to manage that many people. And so we've really spent a lot of time, you know, kind of backtracking, if you will, and saying, okay, we've scaled, this is great, but we got to go back from kind of the ground up, and train these people so that they're not only ready to lead the people today, but as we continue to scale, they're ready for the future challenges that will be presented so that we don't run into this problem again. And so that's been a real big focus, for us is getting them those resources and, training and stuff like that so that they can manage larger groups of people. And obviously they have support, you know, it's not one guy and then 50 direct reports. You know, there's field supervisors and team leads and different things like that in there. But, you know, overall they're in charge of kind of the development of that particular department or branch or whatever it may be.
I'm curious. How many, like, just from off the top of your head, how many people on your team do you feel like are still around from the days that you were 10 million or 30 million?
There are, so when we were back then, you said from 10 to 30 when we were at,
yeah,
10,
like, I guess it was like, I'm just curious, like, how many of the people then are still around,
yep,
now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would tell you that we've got a good portion of technicians and things like that that have stuck around. From a leadership perspective, I will tell you that the one thing, and a mentor of mine told me this back in 2015, I believe it was, or maybe 2018. He said, "You've got to be careful because sometimes the company will outgrow a person." And
so that's what I was wondering, because in the back of my mind, I've heard people say companies can double three times, I think is the scale I've heard. A company can double in size three times before it exceeds a person's capacity. So someone in management, they can go from 2 to 4 and from 4 to 8 and from 8 to 16. After that 16 mil, they have a very, very difficult time growing beyond that threshold. Would you agree with that, you think?
Yeah. So, we have a 10-person executive team, and the vast majority of that team has been with us 3 years or less. And so we have some that have been with us. Our director of operations, she's been with us for, she's actually the longest tenured employee, at 23 years. But I think that is a testament to her willingness to grow. She's played just about every role in the company that you could play. But she has been able to keep up with the growth. And we oftentimes see people who, not that they weren't they were good at their job. It's just, it became too much. And so we've been able to repurpose some of those people, into different roles, whether it be a sales role or a field supervisor or something like that. And then some just naturally exit the business for, another opportunity. And at the end of the day, we're happy for those people too, because if your goal is to be a training and learning organization, the hope is that we prepared them to be really, really great at their next role. And if they see success and do great things, then awesome. We're excited for them.
One of the challenges I see a lot of people in leadership positions struggle with, especially when they're trying to scale, is relinquishing decision-making power. There's a certain amount of decisions that only need to be made by the highest level, right?
Absolutely.
But there's some decision that owners and operators are so used to doing when they're in the minutia that it's hard for them to let go of things that don't impact the business. What type of carpet should we have in the break room? What was your process like learning to let go and delegate and empower other people to make decisions? And sometimes not just trivial ones, but sometimes with decisions that have some consequence to it.
Absolutely. So I think that is, that we have tried to embed that in our culture, one of trust and empowerment, as we've mentioned. the empowerment piece for me is, I always had, an idea in my head that we could scale this business, and that's what we wanted to do. And so I think it's important for a lot of business owners to get really clear on where it is that they want to go. And if you want to build a 600-person organization, you've got to get really clear at the beginning that you can't make all the decisions. And when you get clear on where you want to go, it becomes a whole heck of a lot easier to let go because you know that you have to. Whereas when you're not sure where you're going, it's a lot easier to hold on to all of those decisions and everything like that. And what you end up doing is restricting your growth. You become the bottleneck because you don't know where you're going. Well, I know where we're going over the next 3 years, and there's going to be a whole heck of a lot of decisions that I've got to trust that I've got the right team in place to make those, because I don't have enough time in the day to have everything pass across my desk to okay and approve. And there's certain things, as just smart business practice that, I approve and look over and all of that. But other than that, I am often the one that someone comes to my office and says, "Hey, what about this idea? Sounds like a great one, buddy. Best of luck. let me know where you need help." And I think if you view it as, your job as a leader is, and especially as you scale, it's not to be the decision maker or the implementer It is only to remove obstacles so your people can be successful. At the end of the day, we want to celebrate their success for their idea and what they came up with. And you do that by just supporting them and offering help where you can so that they can be successful.
I love that you just said that. It kind of reminds me of, I believe it was either CEO of Alphabet at the time or Google. It was one of the two, which now it's the same person. But this idea of they viewed the role of the CEO as essentially like knocking down obstacles, but breaking ties. Like it was almost to facilitate disagreement with people at the leadership team level and then knock down like whatever that is that's keeping that decision from being made. Do you feel like that your leadership team is able to experience healthy conflict? And by healthy conflict, like they're arguing for the right reasons over the right things and the debates are good. And that you do have to find yourself like breaking down those ties sometimes? Or do you feel like, generally speaking, the team gets along well, there's not a lot of conflict? Like, how would you describe the dynamic of that group of 10?
Yeah, so I view my role as kind of the, everybody's coming at it from their own perspective, whether that's a finance perspective, an operations perspective, a training perspective, a sales perspective, whatever it is, they're all coming at their from their own perspective. And so where I try to be is more of the facilitator of kind of smoothing out whatever the idea is, because it's my goal to support everybody on the executive team. Well, I support them by, okay, what are you running into? Well, I can't get so-and-so to, you know, understand why we're doing this. I was like, okay, well, let me talk to them and I kind of see what your picture is here and see if that works. And oftentimes, what I'm able to do is kind of massage out all the messiness when asked. And, you know, they've got it figured out. It's just a matter of connecting all the pieces. Because I, you know, having been in the business, I can kind of see from all the different angles and I have the clearest picture of where we want to go. So it's like, okay, well, let's build that, but will it work for double the size? Well, maybe not. Okay. Well, let's take a look at that and make sure that we've got all of that ironed out. So yeah, it's more of a facilitator. Typically all of our big projects, we have a director of continuous improvement, who runs all of our big initiatives. And so she kind of heads up the whole project. And then in a lot of those project meetings, I'm not there. I let them kind of figure it all out and, you know, put their best foot forward and all of that. And then they'll bring me in or I meet with her once a week and she kind of gives me an update or, you know, hey, we're kind of running into this. I may need your help there. May need your help here, whatever it may be. So, I've really at this point really empowered our team to, you know, go solve big problems. I'll give them my opinion if they want it. But I like to try to keep my opinion out of it because oftentimes my opinion will take precedent and I don't really have the background that they have and their idea is usually better than mine.
Are there ever times where you've, this sounds weird because even like recognizing that their ideas are better than yours requires a certain amount of trust with your team. And I'm imagining that happens throughout the organization, right? That you hire people, you attract people, you retain people who you feel like are competent. They bring a lot of cultural values. They have the capacity that you're looking for to help the business meet the business goals. So that just requires inherent trust. Are there ever times where you put your trust in someone that it backfired? Like either you misread the person, you misread their capability or what they brought to the table, or maybe you misread their agenda. Like, is there ever a time where in the act of trusting and delegating and empowering someone, it kind of bit you in the butt?
So I would say earlier on, yeah, we had some of that. But I also think that where I draw my comfort from, you know, putting that trust out there is just our overall culture, and how, you know, You can only, I always say, you know, your culture is kind of the protector of the values and the things you hold, you know, important. And so, we've all been burned and different stuff like that. But I think that you're less likely to get burned when you dole out that trust. It's almost like a, you know, it's you have to give it in order to get it. And so I feel like a lot of people sometimes that talk about, you know, hey, I lost this manager and he stole a bunch of employees and different things like that or whatever. Everybody's got their story. And that's not to say it won't happen to us again, and it probably could, but I think by giving that trust, again, you attract the right people who want to serve in the culture. And, you know, I've taken a lot of, you know, people and, you know, technicians. It's a small world in our industry. And so everybody knows everybody. It's like, oh, no, that guy's not any good. Well, then he comes to a culture where he's supported and trusted and empowered. And then all of a sudden, he fits right in. And so that has been that's been a key kind of learning for me is just, you know, you've got to give it. If you don't trust anybody, well, they're not going to trust you. And oftentimes that's when things break down and you get burned and things like that. So I would say that's kind of the piece of it. To answer your question, yes, we have in the past, but I see less and less of it for sure.
If somebody's listening to you now, and they're like, maybe they like the idea of delegating, maybe they're tired, they feel burnt out, they're struggling to attract the right people. What are like two or three things that you would encourage somebody who's like in the process of wanting to attract the right people and then learn fundamentally at the end of the day to empower them, to help them do what you've done? What are two or three of like your biggest lessons or your biggest like, I wish I would have done this earlier that you could pass along?
Yeah. So if, you know, if I would have the one thing, or there's multiple things, but the one thing that comes to mind when we talk about scaling is that, you know, we're in the trades, we're in the people business. So you've got to have technicians. We sell labor essentially, to a certain degree. So, in order to add more labor and capacity, you've got to find people. And the one thing that I would do far earlier than we did was to build a recruiting team. Who, you know, as a business owner, I still remember it like it was yesterday. You know, I would be the one searching Indeed and job boards and different stuff like that
for technicians.
Yeah, for technicians. And then oftentimes it would fall to the wayside, and really you only looked at those when you needed people. And so then you're always behind the eight ball. And so we have a team of, I think 6 recruiters now, that just recruit talent. That's all they do every day. You know, we have orientation every other week. We had a class of 40 start yesterday. And because recruiting is their number one job, we added 300 team members last year. And it's all a, you know, a testament to them, and their focus. When you're the owner of a business, it may seem like, well, I don't want to, a recruiter will pay for themselves if they can find you like 2 technicians. So think about what they could find if they, all they did every day was focus on recruiting. And that's what ours do. They focus. We're always constantly looking for the best people out there.
Yeah, that's so hiring, building a recruiting team seems like a no brainer, especially when you're trying to do what you've done. What other sort of like insight or like, oh, I wish I would have done this sooner, comes to mind?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, if there was something else when we were smaller that I would have done is really focus on the one, and this is kind of a, you know, it's one of the kind of the gray subjects, but, you know, as far as there's not a specific way to do it, but really looking at your culture and your values and making sure that you're going to operate like that. Cause then when you go to hire, you can hire on those values. So I think that kind of goes along with the recruiting piece that I can think of. And then the other one is to have visibility to your numbers. You know, you've got to understand where you are, and what changes need to be made in order to hit, you know, where you need to be going. You know, I see so many businesses that, you know, are not making any money, And it's not all about the money, but that's how your business is going to sustain so that you can create a place where you can be a training organization. Having visibility to those, I think is incredibly important, because that's ultimately how you can operate your business. You train and develop your people so that they can go out and get you those results. At the end of the day, if you don't know where you're at, it's hard to go where you want to go.
Yeah, you've said that a couple times, which is this idea of like knowing where you're going makes it easier to let go. And I think that that's a really beautifully said, very concise way to kind of talk about the role of leadership, right? Of create the clarity, understand the vision of where you're going. And then when you start attracting the right people, it's easier to let go because there's clarity, there's alignment.
Yeah. And I would say that brings, sorry to interrupt.
I just thought
of something as far as kind of things I wish I would have done earlier. So when you talk about vision and knowing where you want to go and stuff like that, so we write a document every year. Right now it's, I think, 16 pages long, which depicts what the company will look like in 3 years. And we write this every single year at the end of every year, and then we roll it out to our entire team so that they know where we're going. And one of the things that I would tell business owners is, if you want to get everybody on the same page and rowing in the same direction, you need to take the vision that you have in your head of where you want to go, and you need to share it with them. Because there's nothing like, I go around to each branch and each department, and I roll out the vision at the beginning of every year. And the excitement that I see on people's faces, because they know what they're building and they know what's being done to help them, and they know that they're a part of something special, is really, you know, selfishly, it's really cool to see. But on a larger scale, when you get everybody in the company pushing towards where you want to go and everybody's aimed at the same place, it's a pretty magical thing for scaling, for sure.
It's, I'm trying to remember where it was. It was some leadership training several years ago now, but essentially, they talk about when you get the organization to a certain size, the primary goal of the leader is to kind of live in the future, right? Live in the future, paint the vision, like you're a cheerleader for like 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now. And if the leader ever gets in today or this calendar year, there's a breakdown, like there's a problem. The leader's not doing their role. And I love that you've kind of built an organization where you're kind of perpetually living in this 3-year plan. You're always out there. You're always championing this 3-year plan, and you let the leaders below you, the leaders, the managers, even the individual team members, technicians, the CSRs, they're able to like execute within like their day, within their quarter, within their calendar year. So I love that you're able to successfully pull yourself out. You stay in the future. You let everyone below you kind of get closer and closer to real time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point that you bring up as maybe another point for, you know, that company that's, you know, looking to scale. One of the biggest one of the biggest growth levers that we ever pulled was when I removed myself from the day to day. It was because what happens is when you're trying to play both roles, it's hard to jump back and forth from the day to day to the future. And if you want to be out in the future, well, then stuff in the day to day gets left behind. Now, there's obviously a point when we were, you know, smaller. Yeah, you have to play both roles. It is what it is. You got to go get it. But as you scale, one of the things that I would say, if I could have done differently, I would have pulled that lever sooner and gotten out of the way. But it's tough. That's the tough one. Like, oh my gosh, the operation, like we've got to, you know, I got to be able to make a decision and do this and do that. And I think what I learned is that when I'm out of the way and you hand that off to, if you're a visionary, if you hand that off to the right person who can run the operation, when they're focused on that day to day, the month to day, quarter to day, they can produce a hell of a lot better results than you can trying to juggle both.
You've a couple times have made references, like you just used the word visionary, but you also use like right people to right seats. that sounds like EOS. Are you guys an EOS organization?
We are not. I've read all the books, and that's where I obviously got the concept. I think the visionary integrators in Rocket Fuel, which is another one by Gino, as a supplement to Traction. But I've actually read that book. So when my brother handles the operations along with our director of operations, her name's Christy. I actually read that book with Christy when we made the change, and it helped us a lot. And I've also read or made other leaders who are, you know, building teams under them. I've made them read the book too. So if you got a manager and you got a couple of field supervisors, it's a different scale. So you got to kind of wrap it around there, but it's been really good for them to kind of, for them to understand their role of, you know, when you go from managing frontline people to managing essentially other leaders, there's a different kind of, you know, relationship. And so that book's been super helpful, for us, in really spelling out that relationship.
If you clearly have so much you could bring to the conversation to help contractors. I know you have resources on your own. If somebody wants to like pick your brain, learn more about what you're doing, how you're thinking about things, which is clearly like next level, how is there a way that somebody could like contact you directly if they wanted to?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably the easiest way, is my email. It's chad@petermanhvac.com. If you want to shoot me an email, we host, we host monthly tours at our shop. So we've got one coming up next week. We've got, I think 30 or 35 people coming in. And then we have, so that's our February. We've got our March, April, they're already full. But we just opened up, May, June, July, and August tours. But yeah, if you want to shoot me an email, I can get you directed to the person where they can get you the sign up link. And more than happy to host you. We go through a full day of, we touch on marketing and, recruiting, and we do a shop tour. I do a Q&A at it. So, it's a really fun day, free of charge. We just invite people in and hopefully we can help out some people.
I will 100% drop that information in the show notes. So, because clearly, a fast growing shop that's kind of scaled at various stages, almost every single home service company will gain value out of going and doing one of these monthly tours. And it's so cool that you open up your shop for that. Chad, I know you're crazy busy. I love that we're able to get you on again. I always love getting you on the show because you just bring so much. Super, super happy for your success. I cannot wait to see how this next 3-year plan unrolls for you, man. Keep up the great work.
No, really appreciate you having me, and what you're doing for the industry, bringing guests on to kind of give their story. I listen to podcasts all the time, so I appreciate what you're doing, and thanks for having me on.
This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors, and founder of Levergy, the digital marketing solution for serious home service companies. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another awesome episode. See you soon.